on all of its sides is still a conjecture. Moreover, this is a conjecture which is non-trivial to test, since basically when we are in the strong coupling limit of strings, where the semi-classical approximation works nicely, we can't do anything about the gauge theory operators and vice versa. And here, the crucial test and the missing link between string theory and supersymmetric gauge theory is often the theory of integrable chains, since it possesses the wonderful property of being extendable both into large coupling limit and small coupling limit. And by now, it stands as effectively as, we might say, the third side of ADS-CFT duality. Yet, it is also a conjecture, which has to be proven on specific examples. So what example am I going to deal with here now? It will be specifically this duality between strings in ADS 4 times CP3 on the string side, the Gromov-Viera integrable all loop, or claimed all loop beta ansatz on the Heisenberg chain side, and the n equals 6 ABJM model as the string theory. More specifically, I'll be talking today about these two first rows, being interested in the strong coupling limit. And what I'll be doing, I'll be validating Gromov-Viera beta ansatz by means of direct and exact quantum mechanical calculations in ADS 4 times CP3 in the near BMN limit. But let me come to this statement in more details a bit afterwards. And now I want to mention some of the other limits in which, in principle, strings or the chain can be solved and which can be compared to our result as well. So when we talk about testing the duality, we of course never mean having quantized the strings non-perturbatively fully in all possible limits. There are two basic major classes of limits. So one of these classes deals with long chains with large J, so J is the number of nodes or of scalar fields in the corresponding gauge operator. And they have, well, these solvable examples, zero or very small Lorentzian spin. In particular, the BMN limit is precisely that case of the solvable and very well understood example of string theory. And its counterpart, different qualitatively, or quantitatively rather than qualitatively, which is known as giant magnet. So I'll be dealing today with near BMN limit, and I'll say a few words about how our results stand in correspondence to what people have done earlier with giant magnets. On the other hand, there are also well understood limits for rather short operators. So they can be quite short, like they might have just two scalar fields, or they might be short in terms of their length being comparable or small with respect to the Lorentzian spin. However, these operators are also nice from the point of view that they allow very interesting string theoretical calculations around them. Yet they so all of them are only on the semi-classical basis. So today I'll move into a different direction in terms of more or less all of these solutions. I'll be doing the near BMN limit, which supersedes the validations of Gromov-Feher beta ansatz and strings in the giant Magnon limit. Since in giant Magnon, everything is more or less classical. Giant Magnon is a large guy with a lot of momentum pumped into it, whereas the oscillations in the near of strings in the near BMN limit are small quantum guys, and you cannot do anything but apart from quantizing them exactly. And this is also something which will distinguish my results from what people have been doing semi-classically with the spectra of oscillations around these classical solutions. The point is, on which I'll also comment in more details, that for our near Behmann limit in the exact Goldschmidt quantization, Hamiltonian quantization picture, I do have full control over Hilbert space, and therefore I do not run into troubles that people do have with different regularizations for these types of solutions. So again, just a reminder, a pictorial reminder about the asymptotics I have been talking about. So what are these asymptotics from the point of view of geometry? So the long strings, strings in BMN limit and the long chains in BMN limit and giant Magnon limits are particularly known for living in the center of ADS, where the space is flat, approximately flat, and therefore you can do a lot of nice things from the point of view of geometry. You can do the Penrose limit and next order corrections to Penrose limit, and thus you're quantize the strings and write down the interaction Hamiltonian, so you possess a very understandable and clear picture of the physics of these oscillations when the string lives near the center of the ADS space. And these string states correspond to operators made of scalars, a large number of scalars with insertions of those scalars which we consider interaction, which we consider to be an excitation over some scalar chosen as vacuum state. And on the other hand, the, for example, the Gubsorg-Levanov-Polyakov string or the rotating circular strings all have non-trivial dynamics in ADS, which makes directly quantizing them quite quite a problem, and therefore people have to live by means of only semi-classical approximations. So just to remind you what the objects are we deal with when we talk about the integrable chains. So we have a discrete closed one-dimensional chains with spins living in each node. So these spins are vectors of some representation of the global symmetry group, the same global symmetry group that acts upon the geometry of the string background, and the same global symmetry group that is the symmetry of the corresponding supersymmetric gauge theory. So for simplicity, it's easier always to describe to explain what these magnons are and what these excitations are in terms of magnons. So a single magnon is organized just as a plane wave excitation. So a magnon down symbolizes a vacuum state. A magnon up stands for the simplest possible excitation. So this is just a plane wave running around this chain. Then you can combine these plane waves into two magnon states, which will also contain the S matrix, containing essentially all of the information about the dynamics of the chain. So since the chain is integrable, the only thing you have to know about its dynamic is a two-point S matrix, since the rest, the three-point S matrices, and higher objects are going to be expressed by me due to factorizability property in terms of the two particle S matrix. So these are basically the two types of objects I'm going to consider, both on the chain side and their counterparts on the string side, and I'll be calculating the self-energy corrections to one magnon state and scattering matrix effective interaction energies for two magnon states and comparing them on the two sides of duality, which will yield at the end a very amazing coincidence of both spectra, which is beyond the incidental coincidence, but rather points out to a deep unity indeed of these two completely different models. Make some connection to gauge theory, just let me point out a few basic things. How you relate your state of a string chain to an operator of the gauge theory. So what's going on here is that, again, explaining the things on the simplest SU2 example. You choose its scalars as a vacuum state Z and an excitation state phi. And this is equivalent to having a spin down and spin up state. On the gauge theory side, when you deal with the complete basis of all the operators, you can calculate the, so these are the operators of type, of trace, of a number of fields, phi, say, k pieces of field phi, and j minus k pieces of field z to make the total number of scalars z. So we deal with all operators of this kind. And what you can do on the field theory side is to calculate the matrix of anomalous dimensions of these operators. And then you can diagonalize the basis of these operators, and thus obtain the anomalous dimensions of each subsector of this sector of the field theory. On the gauge side, we interpret this state as a state in which I have, let's say, k times spin up and j minus k times spin down. This matrix of anomalous dimensions is interpreted on the let's make this chain sign. On the integrable chain side as the Hamiltonian of the chains. So what I do here is I solve just the Schrödinger equation. So by now it's in the coordinate representation so far for these state of the chain. And this is how the equivalence between the chain and the gauge theory functions in the weak coupling limit. So just to be specific, to have a notion of how the Hamiltonian H looks like. So you can derive starting from the matrix of anomalous dimensions on the gauge theory side, and see that it has a form of the simplest next nearest neighbor order, nearest neighbor interaction that we've seen perhaps many times in solid state physics and similar types of applications. So in the lowest order, in the weak coupling limit, this Hamiltonian will be organized, for example, like coupling times some number times the sum over all nodes of the chain. So this runs from 1 to j, where the j is the length of the chain. And sigmas are just the, let's say, SU2 in the simplest case, generators acting upon node I and node I plus 1. And for sure, you can extend the chain and have a greater order of interaction when you'll couple not just the next order spins, but also the spins which are separated by one nearest neighbor order, and so on. So this is how it works in the small coupling approximation. So basically, we can say that by now, beta ansatz is just a tautology. This is, we calculate something in the field theory, we interpret it in terms of beta ansatz. And one might ask, why do all that? And the answer is peculiar power, calculation power of beta ansatz, which also miraculously becomes predictive when it comes to writing it down for higher order interactions, and finally writing it down in the strong coupling limit. So first, this beta ansatz for supersymmetric gauge theories was understood, indeed, as I have just shown here. The results for matrices of anomalous dimensions were just interpreted in terms of some effective spin chains. And this was already a breakthrough in our understanding of how one else can think about the renormalization properties of operators in certain supersymmetric gauge theories. Yet, that was not all. This was just the start of the whole beta ansatz paradigm with regard to ADS-CFT duality. After this beta ansatz has been formulated in this coordinate representation, as I have shown here, you can easily reformulate it algebraically in terms of beta equations. And again, by now it is just something I rewrite, but it's already just one further stop to understand step to understanding beta ansatz at strong coupling. So how do the beta equations work? Basically, they are very simple. So I'm writing this down just for you not to be amazed of what's being written on the next slide. So basically, beta equations state that a holonomy for a spin moving, for a magnon moving around the chain is equal to the product of S matrices. And this again, a weak coupling limit can be understood just as an interpretation of the renormalization physics understood in terms of the integrable chains. So a magnon is just this plane wave. So now imagine I have a set of magnons living in my system, and this means that the effective description of my system is equivalent to given a number of momenta from 1 to k, which describe some excitations moving around it. So how do I concretize these equations? The holonomy is the phase of a specific magnon. So take Pj as its momentum, which I take all over the chain. So since I pull it through all the nodes, the holonomy becomes exponent of ipj. And the S matrix can also be derived from the original Hamiltonian. And it is simply related to the rapidities of the magnets. And rapidities you can just relate to the momenta of these guys. So, and this product goes so many times as there are magnets. So you scatter, you take one of them, and you scatter off all the rest in the system. And from this simplistic approach, you can promote your better answers to more complicated gauge groups, like the one written down here. So the magnons, so the spins and the nodes of the integrable chain live in the representations of the global symmetry group acting upon the manifold where strings live and being the symmetry of the corresponding gauge theory. So for example, in case of ADS4 times CP3, this is my Dynkin diagram of this group. So how do I write down the beta equations for such complicated object? It can be done just purely algebraically, basing on this simplistic answers that I had for SU2. So SU2 has just one node, and you can scatter magnon off the magnons of its type solely. So here you have magnons of different time. I label them 1, 2, 3, 4, and 4 bar. And for example, if I want to scatter magnons of type 2, I write down on the right-hand side of beta equations scattering with its own kind. So I scatter 2 of 2, except for itself. Then I scatter 2 of 1, and I scatter 2 of 3. And I don't scatter them off 4 and 4 bar because Dynkin diagram doesn't have the corresponding link. So by now, all this is still derivable. So you can derive it algebraically, or equivalently, you can derive it in the weak coupling limit, feel theoretically, and just forget about for a moment about the sigma and about the x variables here. So if this all is derivable, and if this all comes from weak coupling, so how do I state that it has to tell us something about string theory at strong coupling limit? And the answer is that here is where the conjecture comes into play. For what is done then cannot be figured out from the field theoretical part, point of view, or from the purely algebraical point of view. But it can be, let's say, scientifically guessed. So this part for example, these S matrices are fully derived algebraically. But then what you start doing is you deform the kinematic variable with some function carrying the coupling in it. So the U is a rapidity variable. And instead of using the rapidity, we do a deformation by means of Zhukovsky transformation, suggested quite already a time ago by people who have been studying ADS5 times S5, duality and beta answers for that. So Beiser, Staudacher, and others. And in doing this duality, a yet unknown function is involved, this h of lambda, which must stand for, well, as we hope, both large and small coupling effects. So this is one conjectural deformation of the original purely algebraical, algebraic beta answers. Another additional element in the construction, also partially justified from the algebraic point of view, but not yet fully, is this dressing phase, and dependent on the limit in which we take it, it has different names like Beiser, Tetten, Staudacher, or Arturo Frolov, Staudacher. It again is supposed to take care of the non-trivial behavior of these beta answers for non-zero lambda and actually for large lambda. I have been making such a long point here just to make it clear for everyone and to understand which part of this construction is a derivation is derived rigorously, which is guessed, and why we have to check it. So the type of the function of this dressing function is for sure a guess. The phase, although it can be justified from the point of view of so-called string beta answers, is also a guesswork. So therefore, this is a good question. These Fraunhofer-Bahr nodes are not the only ones carrying the momentum of the magnon. Why does it happen like that? Because only Fraunhofer-Bahr nodes, if you look into the algebra described by Dynkin diagram, carry the dilatation operator. And our understanding of the Hamiltonian of integrable chain is such that it is equivalent to the renormalization to the self to the matrix of anomalous dimensions due to being in fact the next order correction in G squared in the coupling constant to the dilatation operator. So just so the answer is just algebraically the dilatation operator is supported only here and here. You write down the algebra. So basically, the nodes of this algebra are Cartan elements of the so the nodes of the diagram are Cartan elements of the algebra, right? And some Cartan elements have to do something with the dilatation operator. So basically, it's the Cartan operator might be something like d plus something, d minus something, and then you form a dilatation operator out of two of them. So you can just look up this algebra in some of the references which you don't hear, have here on my slides, but well, I can just give you a link where you can look it up. Okay. In blue is shown this Bayes-Edenstow-Dacher phase. So as I said, when you write down the beta ansatz equations, you start by looking at with whom this, for example, node or this node can interact. And in the so when you forget about the phase and can interact only with its nearest neighbor in Dynkin diagram. But this happened not to be enough to describe strong coupling effects in this theory. And therefore, so additional interactions effectively came into play, which do not correspond to some link on Dynkin diagram. Because so Dynkin diagram doesn't have here a link. So this link is, well, I don't know how we can call it, but it's not algebraic. So it's just to a certain structure of self-interaction of magnets living on these nodes. So here it self-interacts with its with magnets of its own type, and here it self-interacts with magnets of the of the other type. But let me proceed, or if there are any other questions, I think this is the crucial point, and I'll be happy to answer.
What is the cross?
Cross? Where do I say the cross?
On the node.
On which node?
You have
the node. Ah, I don't have a cross. I have, how do you call it? Okay, call it a cross if you want. We call it differently. It's a cell tire, actually, in this terminology. St. Andrew's cross, if you want. So it's just a fermionic node. So some of the nodes in the super algebra are fermionic, and some of them are bosonic. In the so just look here in these so in the length of the of this guy. So sometimes this is an I over two, like here and here. Sometimes this is minus I. Sometimes this is plus I. For example, this. And also you sometimes you do have self interaction of magnets of itself of its own type. Like for example, two magnon two does interact with other magnons type two. Magnon four does interact with other magnon types for type four and four bar as well. But fermionic guys do not interact with those of their own type. So this again can be written down just from Cartan matrix directly. So, and now, what more specifically I'm going to validate here, or unvalidate, if you want. The scaling function h of lambda is one of the crucial elements of this ansatz. So it's different in both strong and weak coupling expansion. You can get the first order of this h of lambda from different grounds. So from beta ansatz you can't get it, since beta ansatz is postulated in what concerns h. It doesn't know anything about it. The weak coupling value of h can be obtained from gauge theory, just by comparing to the matrix of anomalous dimensions. Strong coupling value, a leading order value. For example, this one has been obtained from the semi-classical analysis of beta ansatz itself and comparison to giant magnet solutions. So this we may call this contribution a classical part, since the dynamics of the giant magnet is essentially the dynamics of a classical object. And this A1 encodes the first quantum corrections on the large coupling limit. And there has been an argument in the literature and also in the walls of this institute on several occasions and many other places, because there are two conflicting results for A1. So among different estimates, I have chosen these references. There have been certainly more where the disagreement was stated. So let me, for definiteness, speak about the calculation of Rady-Roybon, Tristan McLaughlin, and Arkady Zeitlin did the spectra, the first quantum correction to the spectra of the circular rotating strings and found this value, the minus log of 2 over 2 pi. So their correction was, so the calculation of the determinants of the fluctuations around some classical solutions in, taken in the Lagrangian worldsheet formalism. On the other hand, this A1 has been estimated also semi-classically, but from beta ansatz. So beta ansatz you can treat in what is more or less similar to the thermodynamic limit when there are quite a lot of magnons. And in this, so in this approach, instead of a set of discrete beta equations, you have integral equations and you have semi-classical quantization of algebraic curves. So the beta ansatz result for this specific coefficient was zero. And I hope I will be able here to argue that this is indeed the correct result. But let me proceed. So to be more technical and more specific in what's going on here, let me present the characters of this place. They are the degrees of freedom in the near Biermann limits. And the near Biermann limit of strings living in ADS 4 times CP3. So there are 8 modes. There are 8 bosonic modes and 8 fermionic modes. Half of them, both bosonic and fermionic, are heavy. These ones are heavy. And half of them are light. And I think I should write down what my omega large and omega small is. Important is, for our further considerations, that the mass of the light mode is twice as small as the mass of the heavy mode. This will be important when we choose the correct regularization prescription for our calculations of self-energy. So all these modes have a nice geometrical interpretation. So the A's live in one of the S2 embedded into CP3, the A tildes live in the other S2 embedded into CP3, and the A hats live in ADS4, one lonely A hat lives on CP3. What you calculate here is the leading order finite size correction to the energy of a single magnon and to the interaction energy of two magnons. So the J is the length of my spin chain. In the Biermann limit, this is just zero. So it is important we are in the near Biermann, because the near Biermann limit is where you have already some quantum corrections entering your calculations. And what is important, that unlike the case of giant magnons, these finite size corrections do not decouple from the quantum corrections. So in giant magnons, you can essentially decouple the finite size effects from the quantum dynamics. Here you cannot. And we'll see that in the expansion we do for these self-energy corrections and the interaction energies, both finite size effects and quantum effects are combined. The same states can be classified from the purely algebraic point of view. So as I said, when we deal with the simplest beta ansatz, its state can be fully described by the set of the momenta of magnons living in this state. Here you just have several types, namely 5 types of magnons, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 4 bar. And thus, by telling how many times each magnon has been has the node of the Cartan algebra has been excited. You can say which state you're dealing with. So these are the light boson states, the heavy boson states, the light fermion states, and the heavy fermion states. And what is important, this exact identification will allow us further to fully identify the spectra, not only sector by sector, but also state by state, of the beta under chain and of the strings in ADS4. So by now, when I've almost run out of my time. How much time do I have left? Yeah. Okay. Fine. So let me just make the major claims, and then I'll present the technical details, which are perhaps not really interesting, but give the impression of what was being done. And so the first claim is that the fully quantized calculation for the strings in the near Bayman limit with the well-controlled Hilbert space without without doing the semi-classical approximation yields zero next order coefficient in the expansion of the scaling functions in terms of 1 over square root of Hooft coupling. The second claim, which is actually less dramatic, since there has been no huge clash about that, but is, in fact, in my opinion, a bit even more fundamental, that we confirm the full equivalence of the spectra and the two-particle sector between the beta ansatz and the string. So we can confirm it for sure for all states up to fourth degree in this lambda prime expansion, where lambda prime is Hooft coupling over the length of chain squared. Moreover, for several states of beta ansatz, where beta ansatz can be essentially solved not just by means of systematic expansion in lambda prime, but solved exactly, we see the absolutely precise equivalence without any lambda prime expansion between the energies on the beta side and on the string side. So, and therefore, we conjecture, actually, now on the ground of the test we have done, that Gromov-Ehre beta ansatz indeed works, and works up to all orders in lambda prime. But let me now proceed to the calculations. So what is important? We start here with the exact Hamiltonian in terms of Penrose in the Penrose PP wave metric, for which we do the 1 over R, 1 over curvature expansion. This yields 3 particle interactions and 4 particle interactions. So this is something already above the old good BMN limit. And in particular, this 3 particle interaction piece is peculiar to the ADS4 case, so it's not here for the ADS5 calculation. And this is just a shorthand notation for my C, which is more or less the mass of the excitation here. So what I do in terms of these quantum mechanical Hamiltonians on the world sheet, I calculate the self-energy correction and the scattering corrections. And although this seems to be more or less simplistic from the point of view of field theory, don't forget that in doing the an Hamiltonian approach to this quantization. We are already in the we are dealing already with all kinds of oscillators explicitly without enjoying the symmetries which are in the problem but not seen anymore. Since we did the light cone quantization, then we separated the modes living on ADS from the modes living on CP3. Also, so each magnon and each oscillator receives from us each individual treatment. Why should we do like that? Because this is the only way in which we can control the Hilbert states and the regularizations. But the negative side, the disadvantage of this Hamiltonian method is, of course, the technical difficulty in doing these spectra. So these are the four-particle fermion piece and the three-particle boson piece. And shouldn't forget that each of the C's, B's, and M's matrices is carrying some combinations of gammas and fermions convoluted with them, and just for fun, the four-particle boson-fermion interaction piece. So you see that we do indeed treat each magnon, each oscillation separately, and we earn quite a bit of a mess for our calculations. And this is a reference slide for what these bilinear combinations of fermions are. So when the smoke clears after some labor, what we get? We get the corrections to the self-energies of these guys. And they're nice. Why are they nice? First of all, you see these are convergent expressions. This means we haven't broken by chance the supersymmetry anywhere. Second, the corrections to the light and the heavy states are also compatible with their dispersion laws and with supersymmetry. So they are, for example, the heavy bosons have same corrections as heavy fermions. The heavy states get twice as much corrected as the light state. So this is all clear and logical. And what follows from it? It follows a very interesting thing. When you take the sum over all of these modes, you get an expression which is exponentially suppressed in terms of the length of the chain. And that means that when you insert the expansion for h of lambda, for the scaling function, into the dispersion law for a magnet, and compare this with the self-energy correction, you will see immediately that your first that your next leading order coefficient in the 1 over square root of lambda expansion is just zero. So here a subtle point arises. Since these sums are not well defined, and certainly by choosing a wrong regularization, you can do a lot of errors. So how do we know that this is indeed this exponential and not the exponential plus some constant? And the point is the following. As I said, the heavy mode is twice heavier than the light mode. Moreover, it has been shown, you can look it up in the paper by Zaremba, that on shell, a heavy particle with momentum 2n decays into two particles with momenta twice as small as the original one. So this this process, in fact, makes it impossible to observe the heavy state in the as the external state. Actually, but it is still a fundamental state of the theory, and it is present in the in all the internal loops. So, what does it mean for any kind of regularization we do? This means that in order for the unitarity of S matrix to be conserved by regularization, if you cut off the heavy loops, so these 1 over omega n sums come from the from summing some heavy modes running in the loops. So if you cut them off at the level 2n large, this means that to preserve unitarity, just to have for these omegas, these virtual omegas, some place in the Hilbert space to decay somewhere, you have to take the other sum, which I subtract from this one, the sum over the light modes, with cut off as twice as small as this one. And this effectively means that we have a good way of control of all other calculations which are not done rigorously in this Hamiltonian formalism with separate light and light and heavy modes. Since if there is a sign, so if we see that the regularization yields something else, this might be a sign that, in fact, that other regularization is breaking unitarity somewhere, and you can consider a non-zero result obtained for self-energies like that as a signature of violating unitarity by your regularization. But let me proceed to the second result, which is the direct verification of the Bethe ansatz. So this slide has absorbed quite a lot of work that one had to do with those three particle and four particle Hamiltonians. And again, after the smoke has cleared out, one can see that the energy corrections to this to the interactions of magnons, or better to say, just the leading order interaction, since at BMN level there was no interaction. So these interaction terms in the 1 over J, 1 over length of chain limit, are organized nicely into four types of corrections with some specific multiplicity. So there are in total 24 degenerate states with light bosons or light with combinations of two light bosons and two light fermions as external states. So in fact, they are, you can get them exactly in all orders of lambda prime. I wrote this as an expansion in terms of these A coefficients, just for easiness to compare it with beta ansatz. So that's it, basically, because I can't show the details of the string calculation and it wouldn't make sense. So let's proceed to the comparison. So these are the beta states. Beta states are labeled, as I said, not by geometric labels, but by the number of separate magnons you have excited upon each of the nodes of beta of Dynkin diagram. So these are the states from our classification of Heisenberg chain state. And here, when also smoke clears, you can see that the energies are just in one-to-one correspondence to the energies of the respective sectors of the string theory. And moreover, you can see, I'm not showing it here because it would be just too long a table, that for every and each of the 24 states, you have its exact counterpart on the string side as well. Moreover, for several states, for example, states where the just the three auxiliary nodes of beta ansatz have been excited, you can write down the energy correction exactly on both sides. So this is how it looks on the string side, where you can parameterize it for the two subsectors of our multiplet of 24 states by means just one parameter A entering linearly this rational function of lambda prime. And in fact, you can see this for at least states where the first three auxiliary magnets are excited just once. So to conclude, I hope I'm not running out of my time too much. How should we look at this result? So is it really something which is brand new and unexpected, or it's just trivial? In my opinion, both answers are in some way possible. Well, first of all, there is certainly an argument that we all believe Gromov-Fierre beta ansatz, and it cannot be just wrong. But this is not a scientific type of argument, because it's not about believing into some things or other. And moreover, we remember that, for example, at weak coupling in the ADS5 times S5 beta ansatz, there used to be some problems at three levels, and there are problems with wrappings and so on. So beta ansatz is still a conjecture scheme. And therefore, I think it is indeed necessary to validate it, especially to validate it in the case where at least one of the sides of the calculation is something well defined and well established, as it was with quantum mechanics on BMN, in the near BMN limit, where you do not do either unjustified conjectures or uncontrollable approximations. In our case, the important part of the work was the fact that we can actually justify the regularization and say why this is the only one you should pick out from physical point of view, from reasoning due to unitarity conservation. There could be, of course, some other arguments about why there are different results with these rotating strings. So one of the arguments is, for example, that the rotating string result by Tristan Rado and Arcadi is just the different sector, and in different sector H might have different asymptotic. That is, H might carry on some dynamical quantum numbers and not just the parameters like lambda and J. This would be rather weird to me, since the inclusion of quantum charges into beta ansatz explicitly would contradict the very essence of this approach, where the charges come to being as something that your physical magnets carry on. The other possible way to argue about H is to say, okay, maybe you have to do some Wilson loops or some other more physical observable and to eliminate H of lambda and then compare the physics. I'm also not convinced with that, since what we do is equivalently a physical observable, since it's in direct correspondence to the anomalous dimensions in the field theory. I think we can still ask ourselves the questions on how much H is universal, perhaps not just with regard to the sectors, but also with regard to different types of regularizations, and to which extent we can indeed carry on the argument of unitarity also for other sectors where the relationship between these modes is normal valid. And this is a particular special feature of near BMN, and we can conclude it with asking ourselves about how much this argument for H of lambda, for the universality of H of lambda, will hold in different sectors of string theory and beta answers as well. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you, everybody, and we'll be happy to answer your question.